afternoon, everybody. This is the Around the House program, and we're glad you're with us. Thanks for sharing this beautiful Rocky Mountain weekend with us. We appreciate your listening, and we hope you'll call in. It's 719-473-1240. I'm Ken Moon. We spend a couple hours each Saturday talking about that special place that you and I call home. So check in early and often. We'd love to have you involved with the show. We also have the live email at aroundthehouse.com if you prefer that way. It's a beautiful weekend here. Hot weekend other parts of the country. I just was talking to my son down in Phoenix. He's driving to work, and I said, do me a favor, glance down at your dashboard thermometer. And he said, I don't want to tell you. It was 113.
Yikes.
On his dashboard thermometer, my son. So it's beautiful there in the winter, but this time of year, oh boy. And the kids, each of my boys have done well enough. They have a swimming pool and really enjoy their pools, but they do admit that many times in August it gets so too warm to swim. So yeah, there's benefits to putting up with a little snow, right, that we have here, such as this time of year. 719-473-1240. We have a guest this afternoon. We will have Kathy Hook from the Colorado Springs Fire Department. She's a frequent guest on the show, and I wanted to get her on the air thanks to, it was Chris Moyer's idea, just to kick around some code stuff and talk about older houses and fire safety and that kind of thing. So we'll have interesting conversation with Kathy. And by the way, speaking of guests, I want to thank John Creddy, who was with us. You missed that, Chris, last week. He was a typically very eloquent John Creddy guest. He's always very good about what he does, and had a good time. Good to have Chris Moyer back in the house, as they say, or in the studio.
Glad to be back. What did John talk about?
What was
one of the feature items?
Yeah. Just summer gardening and fertilizing, a lot of lawn stuff. Yeah. It was good. It was very good. You were gone 2 weeks, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, okay. Good to have you back. And we would love it if you'd call in. Chris will answer the phone, and we can get you on the air. 719-473-1240. Here's a listener named Sally sent this to me. These are called Random Thoughts as We Age, okay? And these are kind of cute, I think. Wouldn't it be great if we could put ourselves in the dryer for 10 minutes, come out wrinkle-free, and three sizes smaller? Yeah. Last year, I joined a support group for procrastinators. We haven't met yet. I don't trip over things. I do random gravity checks. That's pretty clever. When I was a child, I thought nap time was a punishment. Now as a grown-up, it feels like a small vacation. Yeah, I'm loving naps. I used to fight my mother on those. I want to go out and play with my friends. Remember that? Lord, grant me the strength to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the friends to post my bail when I finally snap. I like that. My people skills are just fine. It's my tolerance to idiots that needs work. Amen to that. Teach your daughter how to shoot, because a restraining order is just a piece of paper. That's good. That's very good. The kids text me PLZ, please, which is shorter than please, right? PLZ is shorter than please. I text back no, which is shorter than yes. Very good. I'm going to retire and live off of my savings. Not sure what I'll do the second week. Been there, done that. When did it change from we the people to screw the people? Ooh. I've lost my mind, and I'm pretty sure my wife took it. Let's see. This sounds like a Forrest Gump thing here. Even duct tape can't fix stupid, but it can muffle the sound. Yeah. Why do I have to press 1 for English when you're just going to transfer me to someone I can't understand anyway? Yeah. Let's see. Of course, I talk to myself. Sometimes I need expert advice. Yeah. At my age, getting lucky means walking into a room and remembering what I came in there for. And finally, chocolate comes from cocoa, which is a tree that makes it a plant, which makes chocolate salad. Huh? Well, logical. Anyway, thank you, Sally, for that. I thought you might enjoy some of those. Yeah, I like that. Friends to make bail when I finally snap. 719-473-1240. 1240. I've got an article I want to share with you later. David Hersani is a political philosopher and a writer and a columnist and author. I met David once at a political meeting up in Denver. Very, very eloquent guy and fun to talk to. He had a column on EVs, which is a pet peeve of mine. The EV situation is getting worse, not getting better. So David had a column about that at Town Hall. We can talk about that a little later. But in the meantime, we'd love to hear from you, whatever's going on in your life with your house, 719-473-1240. The other thing we talked about, Chris, I was just into my head, is pruning. You know, pruning is once you have bushes that flower, like lilacs and forsythia, you need to prune right now, because if you wait too long, if you prune late in the summer, all those buds, flower buds for next year, will be pruned off. So I just, a couple weeks ago, I had my yard guy prune my forsythia. That's another one thing we talked about. Pruning is important, but the timing is everything, you know.
Could that be a situation where, you know, just maybe just pruning the tree might actually help the tree breathe a little better, especially when you start, all of a sudden you get the heavy bloom, and all of a sudden it's just trying to...
Well, there's no doubt that some prudent pruning, how does that for a phrase, will help stimulate the tree to grow more healthy branches and things, yeah, and... But if you do it too late, as I say, then next year's flowering gets interrupted, and that's not what you want in the first place with flowering bushes. So after the rose bushes, they can wait a little longer. I mean, they can wait till the end of the summer before you prune back the rose bushes. Rose bushes are important to prune back as we get ready for winter, but that's, the winter's a long ways away. Let's don't even talk about that, although the summer, as it always does, is really rolling on by. Here's an email from Diane. We got a lot of good email this week. I have one of those plant hanger swag hooks in my ceiling. How can I make it disappear? That, you know, Diane, that's a good point. You'll move into a house, and the other former owners have plant hooks here and there, maybe ceiling or wall surfaces that you don't want anymore. You don't want to hang a plant there, or macrame, a plant holder or whatever, and you don't want the hook to stay there. Well, if you really can't pull those out, because there's always a little butterfly molly kind of device behind it that locks it into the back of the drywall. So you just, Diane, unscrew the hook, and that little threaded rod will probably stay in the ceiling. You might, and I say might, be able to grab it with a pair of like vice grips and unscrew it all the way, so the wings which hold it will stay in the drywall behind the ceiling. And that's you know, if it works, it works. If not, if you can't get it to release, you just shove the whole arrangement up into the hole. You can get a fat screwdriver and just hit it with your closed hand, or even tap it with a hammer, and that screw and the little wings or the butterfly part will go up into the ceiling and just stay there forever. Then there'll be a hole there, and you can do whatever you want. You can spackle it. You can use some acrylic caulking. I like the spackling idea, because spackling hardens and doesn't attract dust. But if you want to try the caulking, you can fiddle with it with your fingertip to make it blend in with the surface of the surrounding. If you have a textured ceiling, maybe even an acoustic ceiling, you want to mess with it a little. You can use wet paper towel or just your finger, as I say, to fiddle with the caulking or the spackling to imitate the surrounding texture, and it'll just kind of disappear. Hopefully, you have some touch-up paint that matches the ceiling. And then you're all set, and it'll just blend in with the surroundings. So that's kind of the story. Yeah, you make those disappear, and then put some in of your own in, which the person you sell the house to will want to disappear themselves. So anyway, yeah, that's the story. Thank you for that email. 719-473-1240. Time for a break. We'll be back with your phone calls and some More of this week's great email right after this, right here on Around the House.
Need help with your next home project? Back to Around the House with Ken Moon. Give him a call now at 719-473-1240. That's 719-473-1240.
Hey, let's make it 21 minutes after the hour on the Around the House program. Glad to have you with us. Thanks for sharing your lovely weekend with us here on the program. Hope that everything's cool in your life, so to speak. I wish my kids' lives in Phoenix were a little cooler, but come Christmas, they go neener, neener, because it's 65, 70 down there at Christmas time. Let's see. Gene says, I have a mirror with two little eyes on the edge of the frame. What's the best type of hanger to use? Well, it's much easier to hang something on the wall when you have a wire to work with. Getting the mirror exactly level, using those edge little eyes or those edge hangers will be exasperating. I know they sell tools online, laser tools that you can get, hooks exactly a level on the wall, and I get all that, but getting the exact measurement between the little eyelet hooks is just a pain in the neck. So I would string at least three strands of that fine picture wire back and forth between those eyes, and then you'll have something that's fairly strong to hang it with, and then you can weigh the mirror. If it's a big mirror, you want to weigh it. You can, stand on the scale and then pick the mirror up and do the difference, the math, and you can see what the mirror weighs. I like to use 100% safety factor when you're hanging anything valuable on the wall. So if the mirror, let's say it weighs 20 pounds, then get a hook or a hanger that will support at least 40 or 50. Okay, so get that 100% safety factor. I like those Hercules hooks. Have you seen those? I don't know if you've used those before. They are terrific. It's a wire. It's hard to describe on the radio, but it's a wire, kind of a loop with a straight wire on the end of it, and you thread it through a small hole in the drywall, and that straight part goes up behind the drywall. So you have this little hook. What you're left with is the little hook hanging out of the hole in the drywall, with all of that wire that you can't see behind there, holding it in place and absorbing the load. So I do like that. Hercules Hooks is a brand name. You can find them all over the place, online and at the hardware store and home centers. Then your triple wire strand will just hang on that hook, and you'll be all set. If you want to put two of them in, here's the thing. Those little eyes on the edge of the mirror frame are, you want to work with them. You want to just string the wire through them. But if you want to put a double hook arrangement on the wall, the double hook will ensure that the mirror stays level and is more stable than a single, if you get what I mean. So if you put two hooks in the wall, say 3 inches apart, then you can just hook your wire over both of those hooks and rock it back and forth until the mirror is perfectly level. So it's easier to get the mirror level, and it's easier and more convenient for you when you hang it, and the mirror is likely to stay level when there's a couple of hooks in the back of it. Those hooks can be at roughly the same level. They don't have to be as exact as a laser would make them, but having that double hook arrangement with the wire strung through those eyes on the edge frame really would make a good stable hanging system for your mirror. I hope that's clear, Gene, because if it's a big mirror, and if some, maybe it's an antique or heirloom that you don't want to come crashing down to the floor, that's the way to do it. Okay, 719-473-1240. Laura says, the brick around my fireplace has lost its luster. What can I put on it to give it a satin look? Well, yeah, brick gets a little dreary and drab over the years because brick is so porous, it collects dust and dirt and other pollution, maybe Maybe there's been smokers in the house in the past, and cooking produces a little airborne pollution, if you will, a little smoke and grease and so on. The only surefire way with brick is a good power washing. The problem is you can't power wash on the inside of your house, not unless you want to buy new furniture and re-drywall. You could try first of all, you can get a sponge and some Murphy's oil soap or something. And that's better, Chris. Thank you. Murphy's oil soap or whatever your favorite cleaner is, a car washing sponge, and wash the brick down, or a little white vinegar would even do the trick. That will help get some of that embedded pollution and dust and dirt off of the brick. That's a good way to start. And then once it's totally dry, and it might take 2 or 3 days for it to dry, you could try a clear masonry sealant on there. You can find a water-based masonry sealant. This is good for brick or concrete or tile or whatever, and that might shine the thing up a little bit. There's a couple of ideas for you that don't involve a power washer in your family room. You could also, and I've seen people do this, you could paint the brick. Now, this is a one-way trip. Once you paint brick, you can't reverse it and unpaint it, if you will. So if you think with your decorating scheme, sometimes brick, particularly in houses built in the 80s and earlier, is a little old-fashioned, kind of dark colors. And I've seen people jazz up their family rooms by putting a beige or a gray paint on the brick. You could use a satin or eggshell finish to give it a little bit of a glow. So think about that, if that would blend in with your decorating scheme. If not, just cleaning it up in the masonry, clear masonry sealant will make it look a little fresher, if you will, and give it a little more of a snap, maybe like it was when it was first put in. So there's some ideas for you. The painting the brick, as I say, you can't take it back, so you have to. That's a tough decision to make. But I've seen people do that and very happy with the results, because it blends it into your surrounding decorating, gets rid of that dark old color that a lot of brick is from the 60s and 70s. We tried so hard to make houses dark inside and out with dark woodwork and paneling and brick. So that's just a couple ideas for you.
That sort of reminded me of the days of Comiskey Park, when they decided in the latter years of the ballpark before they tore it down.
Yeah.
They put the extra coat of white on paint all around the ballpark just to try and spruce it up.
Was it dingy looking?
Considering it was built in 1910, the idea of trying to find a way to spruce it up in its latter years. Yeah.
You saw a White Sox game in Chicago?
In the newer park, yes.
What's it called, the new park?
Guaranteed Rate Field.
Okay, very good. It's not as a legacy a name as Comiskey, but that's okay, right? What are you going to do?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, who won?
White Sox did.
Oh, very good. Let's see here. So before we go to break, Sammy says, we replaced our water heater and now the water is rusty when we first turn it on. Any ideas? Well, Sammy, you didn't say if you were in an old house. If you have a really old house built before, say, the 50s, you may have galvanized steel water piping in there, and you need to get rid of that stuff. Put PEX in. That PEX is that new plastic water pipe. If you look at old water pipes from old houses, the galvanized steel, they accumulate a layer of rust and scale on the inside that probably look like a lot of heart arteries do after, 60 or 70 years of eating cheeseburgers. You know what I'm saying? The scale introduces extra rust into your diet and drinking water. Get rid of old galvanized. If that's what's going on, that may be the reason. You may just have disturbed some piping, and that it probably will go away. I want you to get all the aerators and the faucets in the house. Take those out and scrub them with toothbrushes to get all the crud out of the aerators for sure. And I think this will probably go away. One question, though, for you. When the installer put the water heater in, did they use dielectric unions? Now, dielectric unions are the way we connect the water piping to the water heater. And what they are, they electrically isolate the water heater tank from the surrounding piping. If you have minerals in your water, especially if you're on well water, that sort of thing, or just a high mineral content. Sometimes you get currents, galvanic action, it's called, between the water heater tank and the surrounding piping. Electrical currents flow back and forth and can deteriorate the water heater tank. So to obviate that, to get rid of those electrical currents which deteriorate things, we use dielectric unions. They're simply a union that joined two pieces of pipe together with a rubber washer inside that electrically isolates one side of the pipe from the other side. So where the cold water goes into the water heater and the hot water comes out, we use dielectric unions. They're not terribly expensive, but they can really save a lot of money and heartache when they help slow down deterioration of the water heater. So ask your installer if that was the case. But I have a feeling once this disturbed plumbing is sort of recoated with water that flows through it, that the rust will tend, if not, it'll go away. It'll pretty much disappear, I guarantee you. Give it a 2 or 3 to maybe even 4 weeks, and it will go away. 719-473-1240. We take a break now. Kathy Hook from the Colorado Springs Fire Department is going to be our guest, talking fire safety in the second hour. And we'll be right back. I want to talk about Click Heating and Air. I got a nice email from a listener named Kathy. She says, I love your show, and I get a lot of good information from it. I was looking for a company for heating and air conditioning because the company I had before started out in the beginning to be what I thought was pretty good. Then they kept changing their name and started being really hard sells. So she tried Click at my recommendation, Click Heating and Air, and Kathy's very happy. The guy they sent out didn't try to sell me anything. He was very nice. Kathy, thanks for that email. I think you'll send me an email testimony also when you have Click come to your house. It's a family-owned company. They're in business for the long term. They're not going to try to sell you something you don't need, overpriced parts and all that, just what you need when you need it for your heating and air conditioning system. They have a $59 special to get your AC checked if you mention Around the House. So when it comes to heating and cooling, call the best. Call Click Heating and Air. And their phone number is 719-782-5425. ClickHeatingAndAir.com or 782-5425.
Break around the house. That's why there's the Around the House program with Ken Moon. Give him a call now at 719-473-1240. That's 719-473-1240.
Hey there, welcome back. It is 23 minutes before the hour. Kathy Hook from the Colorado Springs Fire Department will be with us in the second hour. I want to talk fire safety. We haven't done this for a while, and there's a lot of good topics about what kind of smoke detectors to use, where they should be located. We'll talk about if you've got kids, grandkids in the house, an evacuation plan in case of an emergency. Talk about basement. A lot of houses have small basement windows that don't meet the current escape standards, exiting standards, but you know there's ways around that to mitigate. And we'll talk about all that stuff, and we'll do that in the second hour. Kathy Hook, who's an education specialist, something like that, right, Chris?
Fire Springs
Fire Systems. Department. Yeah, yeah, fire. Yeah, yeah. In the meantime, here's David Harsanyi, and that's spelled Harsanyi, is a well-known columnist and author, written a bunch of books and appeared in the Wall Street Journal, National Review, all over the place. David is, I met him, as I indicated earlier in the show, up in Denver 10 or 15 years ago. He's been in the New York Post, Washington Post, I see here, Wall Street Journal. And this is caught my eye, and this kind of confirms what I've been talking about on the air and with my friends and the reading. The headline of this is Electric Cars Are a Scam, and I wanted to read this because there's so much here that makes logical sense when you think about electric cars. When we're tearing down and closing down power plants, why would electric cars be a big part of our future? And here we go. Let's see what David Harsanyi has to say. He starts off, the left likes to treat skeptics of electrical cars as if they were Luddites. Luddites were the folks in the early 19th century that would cause mischief and even some rioting and damage and vandalism on weaving machines. They didn't want the modern weaving machines because they would eliminate their jobs. So a Luddite is somebody who doesn't like progress. Well, David says the truth is making an existing product less efficient but more expensive doesn't really meet the definition of innovation. Even the purported amenities and technological advances EV makers like to brag about on their ads have been a regular feature of gas-powered vehicles going back generations. At best, EVs, if they fulfill their promise, are a lateral technology, sideways, right? That is why there is no real emerging markets for EVs in the U.S., as much as there is an industrial policy in place that props up EVs with government purchases, propaganda, state subsidies, cronyism, taxpayer-backed loans, and edicts. The Green Revolution is an elite-driven, top-down, technocratic project. And it's increasingly clear that the only reason giant rent-seeking car makers are so heavily invested in EV development is that the government is promising to limit the production of gas-powered cars artificially, even if people still want them. In August of 21, President Biden signed an executive order to set a target for half of all vehicles sold in 2030 to be zero emission. Isn't that amazing? That's 6.5 years away. California claims to ban combustion engines altogether in about 10 years. So car makers adopt business models to deal with these distorted incentives and contrived theoretical markets of the future. In today's real world economy, listen to this. Ford projects it will lose $3 billion on electric vehicles this year, bringing its EV losses to $5 billion over 2 years. In 2021, Ford reportedly lost $34,000 on every EV it made. Wow. This year, it was losing more than $58,000 on every EV. In a normal world, Ford would be cutting back production, not expanding it. Remember that the next time we are told we need to bail out Detroit. Then again, David says, we're already bailing them out, I suppose. Last week, the U.S. Energy Department lent Ford, again a company that loses tens of thousands on every EV, another $9.2 billion in taxpayer dollars for a South Korean battery project. $9.2 billion, which we have to borrow from the Chinese, right? One imagines that no sane banker would actually do that. The cost of EV batteries has gone up, not down, over the past few years. Ford says these upfront losses are part of a startup mentality. We're still pretending EVs are a new idea rather than an inferior one, but scaremongering about climate and a misplaced romanticizing of manufacturing jobs have softened up the public for this kind of waste. In the real world, there is Lordstown. Remember, I don't remember Lordstown, Chris. In 2019, after General Motors shut down a plant in Lordstown, Ohio, then-President Trump made a big deal of publicly pressuring the auto giant to rectify the situation. CEO Mary Barra, CEO of General Motors, lent Lordstown Motors, a new EV outfit, $40 million to retrofit the plant. Ohio kicked in another $60 million. You may remember the widespread glowing coverage of Lordstown after Biden signed his Buy American executive order. Lordstown's stock shot up because Biden promised to replace the entire federal fleet with EVs. By the start of this year, Lordstown had manufactured 31 vehicles in total. Six has been sold to actual consumers. Most of them would be recalled. The stock was trading at barely a dollar. This past week, the company filed for bankruptcy. Without massive state help, EVs are a niche market for rich virtue signalers. I read a piece last week that most of these Tesla cars and other EVs are simply second and third cars bought by rich white families and not the regular folks that want to drive something they can rely on. Come to think of it, David Harsanyi says that's the sort of where we are now, even with the help. A recent California at Berkeley study found that 90% of tax credits for EVs go to people in the top income strata. Most EVs are bought by high earners who like the look and feel of a Tesla, and that's fine. I don't want to stop anyone from owning a car they prefer. I just don't want to pay for it. That's interesting. Really, why would a middle-class family shun a perfectly good gas-powered car that can be fueled cheaply and driven virtually any distance in any environment in any time of the year? We don't need lithium. We have the most efficient, affordable, portable, and useful form of energy, and we have centuries worth of it waiting underground. Finally, this is a last paragraph here. Climate alarmists might believe EVs are necessary to save the planet. That's fine. Using their standard, however, a bike is an innovation because even on their terms, the usefulness of EVs is highly debatable. Most of the energy that powers them is derived from fossil fuels anyway. The manufacturing of an EV has a negligible positive benefit for the environment, if any. And the fact that if EVs were more efficient and saved us money, and envious politicians and enviros claim, consumers wouldn't have to be compelled to using them. Companies wouldn't have to be bribed to producing them. Would be lining up to buy EVs, which nobody is. So there you are. We hear a lot about EVs, but it's a wish masquerading as policy, it seems to me, and especially in light of the fact that fossil fuels power our economy and provide the power for EVs to charge EVs. And not for me. No, thank you. I don't want to be stuck in the middle of a traffic jam in the winter with my having to turn my heater off because my battery's running down in my EV. And based on the sales I'm seeing, people just aren't convinced. And they're very expensive, too. You know, $60,000 is kind of an average, $50,000 to $60,000 for an EV. And the public's not buying it. That's why the government has to push us into buying them and subsidize us and give us tax credits when it's simply a sideways technology. Interesting. 719-473-1240 is our phone number. We're going to take another break. Kathy Hook, Colorado Springs Fire Department, will be with us in the second hour talking fire safety. We'll be right back. Well, I want to talk to you about Dutch's Home Improvement. How does your house look? Does it need a little facelift, looking a little tired compared to the rest of the houses on the block? Well, give Dutch's a call. You need some energy-efficient vinyl windows to get rid of those ugly old wood, steel, or aluminum windows from bygone decades, and some new siding, maybe a new front door, patio cover, whatever you need to spruce up the exterior of your house. The company you need to call is Dutch's Home Improvement. They've been around over 30 years now. I know you've seen their signs around town. You've heard about Dutch's. Give them a call, 719-392-1369. They have some great deals on the best brands of vinyl windows, energy-efficient vinyl windows, which will save you energy summer and winter. When you think about saving energy, the first thing to do is get some new windows, some new vinyl replacement windows from Dutch's and their installers, the best in town. You'll love the way these folks do business. They're in it for the long haul. Dutch's Home Improvement. To give your house a facelift, give them a call, 719-392-1369.
Fix-It videos can be so confusing. Let Ken Moon walk you through it on Around the House. Give him a call now at 719-473-1240. That's 719-473-1240.
It's 10 minutes before the hour on the Around the House program. Don't forget the podcasts. I'm very grateful for the amount of attention that are paid to Around the House podcast. We get a couple hundred downloads each show, and that's really cool. And I'm so glad you're doing that. Podcasting, of course, I'm an old terrestrial radio guy. You know, I started in AM radio a long time ago. But podcasting is kind of the way radio and TV, for that matter, is branching out. And our podcast of the Around the House show are very, well, all of the ones on the station, although we're in competition. They issue a top 10 list, right, Chris, every month?
Yep.
And I'm usually have four or five slots of the top 10, so I appreciate your doing that, downloading the podcast. The one of this show will be up an hour or two after we go off the air. Chris will post it. We have a year's worth officially, right, Chris? As it looks of the like first so. Of the July, right?
I believe so. Yeah,
yeah,
first.
Yeah,
I think our full year. Yeah,
yeah. I think the first weekend in July 2022 is when we started our Colorado Springs version of Around the House. So there's a whole year's worth there for you. And just go to around, if you want an easy way, aroundthehouse.com, click on listen to podcasts. It'll take you right through to the KRDO site and then to another vendor. And it's easy. It'll pop right up for you to get the podcast. You can get them segment by segment and then, you know, show by show and month by month and year by year and all that. Anyway, as a matter of fact, my old Denver-based show going back about 6 or 7 years is still online at the Apple Podcast. If you just put my name in, you'll see those also. John's, by the way, Kathy Hook from the Colorado Springs Fire Department will join us. We'll talk fire safety around your house, and we'll do that in the second hour. John says, we've steam cleaned the carpet in our rental house. Strong cat urine odor we had still won't go away. Well, you need to look underneath the carpet. When you have strong pet odors, it's usually not just the carpet, although that possibly, but it's usually a pad underneath, plywood floor below that, the subfloor. And I don't know if they did any of that or not, or just steam clean the carpets. A lot of times, steam cleaning will reactivate pet odor. It'll make it stronger, doggy especially, by kind of stirring up the molecules, I guess is the best way to look at that, activating it, if you will. So, you know, you might want to get a black light out. A black light, an ultraviolet light, will show you where the pet stains are, and the steam cleaning may have just spread them around, and we may have big smudges now of fluorescent areas where the phosphorus and other minerals in the urine react to that black light. And so I think you're going to have to start over again and roll that carpet back and check out the pad. Now, you'll see with kitties, it'll be just in specific places. Generally, it won't be all over the house. At least I hope that's the case. And you can find those places, look for the stains on the pad, throw that pad away and get chunks of new pad put in, of course. And you need to treat the back of the carpet. Now, most good carpet cleaning companies know how to treat the jute, whatever backing you have in your carpet, with their strong anti-pet and pet neutralizing compounds. But you need to start at the bottom and work your way up. So roll the pad back where the stained areas are, and clean the floor underneath, whether it's concrete or most likely wood. You want to put a couple of coats of a shellac-based sealer, like Kills or Bullseye 123, on those areas. You can at first you can clean them with a little water. You can put some vinegar in water or Murphy's oil soap or Dawn or Joy, and you know, a few drops in some warm water. Just clean them up and let them dry really well, and then put the Kills or Bullseye, two or three coats on top of those stained areas on the subfloor. And that's the secret here to prevent that odor, because that's where the odor kind of begins. It's soaked into that subfloor and is releasing itself. So once you've done that, replace the pad and treated the back of the carpet. But have professionally now, you can't do this yourself. I think you're going to be fine, and I think the smell will go away. So I hope that's helpful. It's really a three-step process: subfloor with Kills, then the back of the carpet and new pad. I think you'll be all set. 719-473-1240. Fred says, "What kind of evaporative cooler pads do you like? I've seen the regular wood chip thing and then blue plastic and cellulose. Well, I like the ground up wood fibers. I think they work best, and you can throw them away at the end of each season. The blue plastic, the spongy filters or pads in a swamp cooler tend to be kind of expensive. They're supposedly are washable, and they kind of are to an extent. But you don't get to throw away the contaminants. There's a contaminants of water that gets evaporated all summer long in your swamp cooler. Of course, leaves all kinds of minerals behind. And if you have those so-called washable foam-type pads in the swamp cooler, you never really get to throw all those minerals away. They just cling to the inner surfaces of the material. So many times it's ground up aspen fibers that make up the disposable filters in your swamp cooler. So that's what I want you to use. So I think, and you don't want to spend the money for the new foam type pads. They're just, you know, they're fine at first, but after two or three years, you're not really getting the benefits. So I hope that's helpful to you using your evaporative cooler. You want to make sure that you every beginning of each cooling season, scrub out the inside, and provide if there's some rust or corroded spots, you want to put some Rust-Oleum paint on those spots to kind of cover up the rust and corrosion for sure. Let's see, we got a couple of minutes here. Nick says, "What should I put under a decorative bark? Some people say plastic, some say fabric. would you break the tie, please? Well, it depends where you're doing the landscaping. If it's right near the house, I would probably, you know, in an area where you want to maybe plant some perennials and things, I would use landscape fabric because it the moisture that inevitably gets in that area, you don't want to hold it near the foundation and keep that dirt perpetually wet. The landscape fabric isn't perfect, but it allows more evaporation from the muddy and saturated soil next to the foundation than you get when you use plastic. Well, this applies not just to bark, but also to decorative rock. You want to put not plastic near the foundation. You want to put the landscape fabric. I think it's all around. It's better. Even if you don't plant in those areas, at least it'll allow that water to kind of dissipate, vaporize, if you will, to get some of that moisture away from the foundation. Because we don't want to hold water near the house because that is opposite of what we want to do. We want to get rid of water anywhere near the foundation, which can cause all kinds of structural mischief next to the house. So the decorative landscape fabric, the mesh type fabric, usually fiberglass or it can be polyester and other materials. Use that and not the plastic. Your house will thank you for it. We'll be back after the news with Kathy Hook from the Colorado Springs Fire Department. Give us a call, 719-473-1240, and live email at aroundthehouse.com. It's 6 minutes after the hour. Welcome back to the Around the House program, part two on this beautiful Rocky Mountain weekend. This kind of weather is why we live here. A little gray and a little cools down, a little rain, then it's sunny again, and we just love it, don't we? It's a beautiful weekend compared to my kids in Phoenix, what they're going through this weekend. 113 today, 113 tomorrow. Wow. Anyway, thank you for sharing this lovely weekend with us. We have a special guest in this hour. Chris Moyer, it was his idea, and it's a good one. Kathy Hook from the Colorado Springs Fire Department is joining us. She is a regular contributor to the KRDO Morning News Block, and fire safety is of interest to me, and it has been for many years. It's a big part of what I'm a home inspector part-time. As you know, home inspectors really get concerned about smoke detectors and all the other elements of fire safety. Kathy, thank you for joining us today. Kathy, your title is education specialist. Does that cover it, or what is your actual title?
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you for having me on. I have a really long title, a little bit convoluted, but usually it's reduced to community risk reduction specialist. To get technical, I'm a fire and life safety educator and a youth fire setting intervention prevention specialist.
But hard to put that on a bumper sticker, though, isn't it?
Boy, isn't it? That just wrapped your whole car. But
yeah, exactly.
Our job in community risk reduction is to keep those big red trucks and engines from running. We're the preventative part of the fire department.
Is your group the folks that go out to elementary schools and talk to kids and that sort of thing?
Oh, yes, we do. We talk to thousands of little kids, and they're great little listeners. They have some interesting questions, but just starting those building blocks of just having some fire safety, some life safety, some injury prevention is really important from littles all the way up.
I was just thinking my eldest grandchild is a boy down in Phoenix, and this is 20-something years ago, and when I dropped in to see them, flew into Phoenix, he comes up to me and he starts this, stop, drop, and roll, stop, drop, and roll. Is that, you still teach that? Because he thought that was so cool that he could talk about that. I knew he'd been to some kind of fire safety seminar thing.
Yes, we do. That's been taught for generations, but probably a more applicable, or not applicable, but more likely scenario would be that a youth or a family or a person is in a room that is filling with smoke. Not that they're on fire, but there is a fire in their facility. So the message that we really push, even more than the stop, drop, and roll, is the get low and go. And we talk about how smoke rises. And so get low and go is the new messaging, kind of the the more pertinent messaging. But stop, drop, and roll. That's what kids remember that for generations.
So say that new one to me again. Get low and go.
Yep, okay. Get low and go.
Well, and even though he's 28 now, I'm going to tell him there's a new phrase, so he needs to learn that one. I love it. But I remember that was, I got such a kick out of that because it really made an impression on him. Well, listen, you introduced the topic of smoke, and, you know, I go back, I know I'm a lot older than you are, and I go back to the 70s. I think it was the Christmas, Kathy, of 74, maybe it was 75, when smoke detectors, everybody got a smoke detector at Christmas, and there are anecdotal stories about it was under the Christmas tree, we had a fire, and we heard the smoke detector going out. So since 40-something years ago, they've been a big part of our life, smoke detectors. We now take them sort of for granted, but they've saved a lot of lives, haven't they?
I'm so glad that we are starting our segment talking about smoke alarm smoke detectors, because working smoke alarms really do save lives. When there are fatalities, the majority of the time, when the crews run on those, there is either a disabled smoke alarm or not a working smoke alarm at all. So I really do want to kind of start with that. And Let's start with just some super basic terminology, not to get all techie on us, but there's some question between, well, what's the difference between like a smoke alarm and a smoke detector? Most homes, just residential homes, are going to have a smoke alarm. They're standalone, they're self-contained. Smoke detectors are not standalone. They're going to be part of a fire detection system, like they'll be hooked up to a panel. So your multifamily housing will have the detective systems. Your own home needs to have smoke alarms. And that's really important for homeowners or for people that own their own properties. No one is coming through and checking those. If you rent from somebody, by law, your landlord or those maintaining the buildings have to provide a working smoke alarm. But in your own home, the fire department's not going to come out and check that. So just a reminder to everybody, please make sure that you have a working smoke alarm in your home.
Now, since, as you know, all new homes now require multiple smoke detectors all around the house, bedrooms and hallways on all levels of the home, and they're all in a big loop. So one goes off, they all go off. But those, you would still call those smoke alarms, Kathy?
Yeah, because they're not hooked up to a panel.
Okay.
They're interconnected, and interconnected, you know, from going to Walmart, and you can probably get an $8 standalone smoke alarm that, you know, it's just a battery. And then you can go all the way up to those Bluetooth that, you know, when you are in Belize, you can see that there's smoke in your home and you'll get a warning. Such a variation of cost. But usually when people say, well, what's the best kind of alarm? You know, we always circle back to that. We want a working smoke alarm. We want one on every level of your home, inside and outside of all of the sleeping areas. And then we want to make sure that they are less than 10 years old. That's the magic number for smoke alarms, that they are good. They're guaranteed for 10 years. So if you look on the back of your smoke alarm and there's no date that when it was manufactured, that means it's old, because those dates have been, as you noted, this has been going on for a really long time. That is a very old smoke alarm. Do smoke alarms that have exceeded their 10-year outdate work? You know, sometimes they do, but that's when it gets a little bit risky.
Yeah, I think I was going to say there's evidence that they get filled with dust and cobwebs and things and become less, I think, sensitive. By the way, if you're on the beach in Belize with a couple of Mai Tais, you might not even care if there's smoke in your house, right?
Might not, especially if you had a few Mai Tais. Let it do what it's going to do.
Yeah, you mentioned right. Belize. I had to get that in. I'll tell you one thing. We home inspectors, and you will get a kick out of this. When we walk into a house, and say the house is built in the 70s or 80s or something, and the smoke detector is yellow, when it used to be white, we kind of know we've got an outdated smoke detector. And, you know, because the plastic, as it ages, turns brown. But that's a good point. 10 years, and that's kind of the standard, isn't it? 10 years or less, right?
That is the standard. And I'm glad you mentioned the color of a smoke alarm, because sometimes people, like, you know, they're not the prettiest thing in your home. And aesthetically, they're, you know, they're white. They're just a white blob on your ceiling. So sometimes people will paint over those. Well, as you've noted, now you've completely negated the effectiveness of that alarm. So they really are just white alarms that are less than 10 years old. Often ask Kidde or First Alert, or certainly we're not going to recommend any one particular brand, but we do like to stress that it has, that the alarm has been independently tested by, like, a, you'll say UL on it,
right,
a Redis,
right,
laboratory. You can always get alarms from, you know, China in bulk, that who knows what standard they were tested at, but that UL underwriter or those that are tested to U.S. standards is really what you're looking for.
It hasn't been that long that I remember, and this may be still the case, you can tell me, Kathy, that if you move into it, let's say you move into a new neighborhood and you go in your house and there's no smoke detectors in there, you can walk down to the nearest fire station, they just give you a couple of them. Is that still the case?
Well, a new home, as you kind of started this segment by saying, that is a requirement now that when you move.
No, I meant like you're in an old neighborhood, an old house, when nobody's ever bothered to put a smoke detector into the fire station, still give them away, or is that kind of gone by?
So, well, if people, you know, don't have the resources to have an alarm, you can contact us. You can contact the fire department. We do have a limited source or limited supply of working smoke alarms. But I also want to kind of push the American Red Cross. They are just excellent in this area, and they have their Sound the Alarm campaign, where they have a little bit more ability to spend some time in the home and do a home safety check.
Sure.
They will make sure that all of the levels of the home and all of the sleeping areas of the home have working smoke alarms. So, yes, your fire department can assist, but we really, really like working. We partner with the Red Cross. And one of the things they do, as well as Colorado Springs Fire Department, we'll talk about this probably next, but smoke alarms, whether they are hardwired or just standalone, have a battery. The hardwired have a backup battery in case the, you know, the electrical burns through.
Right.
But of course, batteries don't last for 10 years. So the newest alarms that the Red Cross has and that the CSFD have are in self-encased batteries. So you do not have to change that nine volt battery annually. Once you put up the alarm, it is self-encased and it stays for 10 years. They still need to be tested, but you don't have to change.
Yeah, it sounds like one of those 10-year lithium batteries, right? So that's a good. That's a good thing. You don't have to grab that stepladder and hang by your thumbs to change a battery, right? I guess I had not realized that there were self-contained detectors. I know I've recommended on the air that you go find a 10-year lithium battery for a hard-to-reach smoke detector, but that's new information. Thank you for sharing that. I want to, before we go to our break, real quick, there's a detector around that I've been pushing. I'd love your comments on this. That's a combo of a photocell and ionization. So you get smoldering fires and fast burning fires and kind of a dual technology. Do you like those, Kathy? I bet you do.
Love those. They're a little bit more expensive, and not to get too technical, but ionization would be more effective against, like, fast flaming fires,
right,
and then
right.
that photoelectric. If a person is a smoker and maybe a cigarette fell into the couch or into the cushions, a photoelectric detects that a little bit quicker, just different technology. As you noted, combination all the way, because regardless of the type of fire, you'll have, you know, either way, we'll be able to hopefully detect that readily and get everybody out.
Well, I'm glad we agree. You know, I think, and you can confirm this in my reading, that perhaps smoldering fires, like you say, the cigarette in the sofa, kill more people because of the smoke than a flash fire in the kitchen would. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, a fair statement is, you know, certainly flames, heat, they can kill, they can injure, but what kills most people in a fire is that smoke.
If
you can get out before the smoke gets to you, your chance of survival is much greater. So that's really with any fire. That's why we stress those working smoke alarms, regardless of the type. Make sure that it is working, so when there's smoke, you can get out.
I love your comment at the open. The fire department is an organization trying to put itself out of business. That is... you want all of this stuff to be a kind of a preemptive thing to keep families safe. So maybe we don't have to have fire trucks running around our neighborhoods because we're all safe, and that's a good thing. So that's a great philosophy. We don't want to have to go to a fire if we can prevent it, right? Isn't that kind of the point?
Absolutely. It's hard to measure what didn't happen. But we love to say, boy, when you have working smoke alarms and that goes off and you got out and everything, you know, kind of goes as it should, that's a huge win for obviously your family, your loved ones, but really a win for the community that, when people, when they're proactive, when they take preventative measures, it really helps out. There's always going to be fires, unfortunately. But when you do what you can do to prevent them, it is really being a better citizen, better to your family. It's just a good way to live your life.
Well, Chris is throwing ballpoint pens at me. I'm really late for this break. So you just hang on. We're going to take a quick break here. Be back with Kathy Hook from the Colorado Springs Fire Department. If you want to give us a call, talk about fire safety, 719-473-1240. We'll be right back right here on Around the House.
Got a fix-it problem at your house? Ken Moon is here to help. Give him a call now at 719-473-1240. That's 719-473-1240.
Welcome back. It's 25 minutes after the hour. We're talking to Kathy Hook, an education specialist, Colorado Springs Fire Department, CSFD, as somebody once said. And Kathy, thank you again for being with us. I think you and I talked before your segment off the air that we wanted to touch on family evacuation discussion. So you want to start that off? Because I think it's a, you know, if you got little kids or grandkids in your house, it's a big deal, isn't it?
It is. Whether you have someone that maybe cannot drive or are disabled, or if you have little kids that are dependent on you or just yourself, just having some kind of a plan. It's interesting. And you know, we had such beautiful rain and such moisture, and it's so green, and we love that. But we all have to remember that we live in a high-altitude desert, and all that beautiful, beautiful green, it's hot out there, and it's a little breezy and windy, and all that beautiful green is going to dry up. And that puts us at higher risk for wildfire. That's going to be a lot of fuel that's going to dry up. So we always need to remember that we are in wildfire season. I'm asking almost every day, well, when is wildfire season for Colorado? We're not like Florida, where the hurricanes roll in June and roll out in November. We really are always in wildfire season. Some of our worst wildfires, as was evidenced in Marshall Fire last December, that started December 30th. So we really need to be aware that we just always are in wildfire season. So to educate, to get a little bit more in-depth than we have time for on this show, we have been doing with Living with Wildfires Town Hall Series around the city, and we have one of those meetings coming up this Tuesday. It'll start at 6:30 at Pulpit Rock Church. That's on Austin Bluffs Parkway, and just answering questions, covering from your notification to things that you should be prepared for, what those notifications mean, be it pre-evac, evac, shelter in place, really encouraging people to attend either the July meeting or the next one is in August at Broadmoor Community Church. We try and go throughout the city. So you'll hear more about that and see more about that on KRDO and other outlets, but really want people to attend and make themselves prepared for wildfire.
Let's go from the macro to the micro, Kathy. If you've got family members, maybe disabled or kids or, you know, especially little kids, in the event of an emergency, I've heard about, and you may teach this, about we're all going to meet in one place, those kinds of things. Can we talk about that for a minute, about what to do? Go ahead.
Yeah. Having that discussion, having the plan of what we're going to do. Now, you know, you may not be at home, or some of you may be home and some of you may not be home. Some unique situations might be you may have teenagers who babysit, but they don't drive. And so there does need to be a discussion that in the event of an evacuation, you're not going to be allowed to drive back in. So how are you going to notify? Maybe the neighbors should know, you know, my mom doesn't drive, she's home alone. If there's an evacuation, can you assist with that? I do want to touch upon pre-evac and evac. Pre-evacuation, as we have unfortunately learned from incidents here locally, means that there is the potential with wind shift or the way conditions are that your area may need to evacuate. And so that means start preparing yourself. A friendly reminder to your listeners that you don't have to wait until the government says, okay, now you have to evacuate. You can always leave on your own before the evacuation notice goes out. We encourage that. We know what happens in evacuations. Those roads fill up.
Yep.
It gets pretty chaotic. So if people get out of the way that maybe might feel nervous about not being able to drive or a lot of traffic or how they're going to get out of there, we encourage people. First, sign up for those notifications. The COS Ready was the campaign this year. Signing up for alerts through Peak Alerts. You can get notifications on your tablet, on your phone, on your landline. Go to Peak Alerts and sign up so that you and your family know what is exactly going
now,
on.
Are those the like the phone blast kind of things where the computer just calls hundreds of people at a time kind of idea?
Yep, or sends an emergency notification. Signing up for that Peak Alert is really important to do for, you know, every member of your family that is able to sign up for that. And then we added something this year, knowing your zone. You don't have to know your zone, but there used to be just, some zones in Colorado Springs. Now we have over 600 zones. And this is so that it can be a little bit more specific, that maybe just these few homes or this one neighborhood needs to evacuate. And of course, that'll come across and we'll tell you if you are in that. And then having your plan. I get asked all the time, now, if there's a fire, what is the best way for me to evacuate? And that question just is impossible to answer because it depends on wind conditions and road closures and
where the fire is.
Where the fire is. That's exactly right. So, but the point on that is, know different ways in and out of your neighborhood. Know what roads. You may not know this, but believe it or not, 30th Street has actually opened. And so that can be a potential way to evacuate.
Oh, my Lord. That's the best news I've had this month. The 30th Street is open. Holy cow.
But there's a lot of other roads that are, altered or closed. And so know your own area. And I actually live on a street that only has one way out. So that I choose to live there. I love that. But I have to know that if there's something potential that could go on, I need to get out maybe sooner than someone who has many different ways out. So really kind of sharing that responsibility and knowing, okay, these are my ways out. This is what I'm going to take. Discussing with your family. This is who grandma's going to ride with if I'm not home. Where we're going to meet, there are shelters. They fill up just super quick. So, our little joke in the fire department is if your only friends are your neighbors, you got to make some friends on the other side of town. Because if you need to evacuate, you need somewhere to go that you can meet. And sometimes cell phone towers, sometimes communication lines that we're used to go down. And so have like an alternate point of contact for everybody that if we're not able to text, if we're not able to call grandma in Indiana and say, this is where we are. This is what's going on. Just have an alternate plan.
A normal plan. The word is plan, isn't it? It's a plan is a deal.
Is.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, if you think back to, and I know you remember, of course, the was it 12 was Mountain Shadows and 13 was Black Forest, I think. Those were
correct.
Amazing years. And a lot of these lessons, I guess, were learned in those tragedies. And you always learn from your pay tuition, as they say. And you guys conducted yourselves so well in those episodes. We hope we never see it again. But that was really kind of traumatic for our city, wasn't it? Both of those.
It was. And you're right. You wish you didn't learn from tragedy, but a lot of lessons were learned and continue to be learned. So let's take those lessons and let's not repeat our same mistakes. Let's improve.
Those signs along the fences about thank you to the firefighters with hearts all over them and kisses and those kinds of things, those were very touching, weren't they? They were really cool.
They Yeah, it meant a lot. And it's certainly not just fire. There was police, there was ambulance, yeah. There was really a community effort that, you know, there were a couple of people in both of those fires that lost their lives, but that could have been so much worse. The community really did come together. And so, of course, we're always grateful when people work together, help one another. And that's really the bottom line key. Let's share the responsibility. You hear that term all the time. Let's really do. Let's make sure we're watching out for each other.
You bet. Kathy, thank you. You've been a great guest, and I hope we can do it again sometime. We didn't get to everything that I wanted to cover, so maybe you can come back and join us sometime in the future. But thank you for taking the time away from your weekend to be with us on the program here. I'm really grateful to you.
Oh, grateful to be on. Love talking about it. You have a great warm weekend with some rain coming yourself.
Kathy, I'll talk to you sometime soon. Thanks again for being with us. Kathy Hook from the Colorado Springs Fire Department was a wonderful guest, a good interview. So we'll do that again hopefully sometime. Time for a break. We'll be back. We've got a call holding about an attic fan situation. We'll do that right after this, right here on Around the House. There's a lot of hot weather left, and if your AC hasn't been checked this year, I've got a special deal for you. Click Heating and Air is offering an unbelievably priced $59 fee for their air conditioning check if you mention Around the House. Best price in town, so give them a call. Get your tune-up on your AC. It's vital to make sure it's operating efficiently. 719-782-5425 for Click Heating and Air. And if you don't have central air, my question to you is, why not? You get to create your own indoor air environment, and it adds real value to the real estate, to your house. So give them a call. They got some special deals, up to $2,000 off if you get a furnace and AC all in one visit. If you have an older furnace, it's a great deal. So check it out. ClickHeatingAndAir.com is an interactive website where you can click three or four times and get a price. But the $59 is a great deal. Get your AC check. Click Heating and Air, 719-782-5425 or ClickHeatingAndAir.com.
From your faucet to your furnace and everywhere in between, Ken Moon has solutions around the house. Give him a call now at 719-473-1240. That's 719-473-1240.
It's 21 minutes before the hour on the Around the House program. I'm glad you're with us. A special shout out to our friends up there in Wyoming, Casper Country, and surrounding. Surrounding means pretty much the whole state because KTWO is 50,000 watts and covers Wyoming kind of like a blanket, kind of a blowtorch signal up there. K2 carries our program. We're so glad you're with us here. I have a lot of friends up in Casper, Douglas area, so we're glad you're with us. Patrick is waiting. Thank you for your patience on line two. You're on the air with Ken Moon, and what can I do for you, Patrick?
Good afternoon, Ken. How are you? Long-time listener.
I'm glad you called, Patrick. Yes, sir.
I live here in Colorado Springs, have a bi-level house. We had insulation put in about 15 years ago.
Uh-huh.
The upstairs, where the bedrooms are, is pretty hot. And I was thinking about installing a solar attic fan. Have you heard any comments, and what are your thoughts on a solar versus a powered, electrical-powered attic fan?
Now, are you talking about the solar ones that sit up on the roof?
Yes.
Yeah, they're okay. They're kind of pricey, the last time I checked. Have you gotten prices lately, Patrick?
I checked on the website, and for 30 and 40 watt, solar attic fans made by Remington. They run about $350.
Yeah, they're pretty pricey. A couple of questions back up here. Do you or not have central air at your house?
Yes, we do.
Okay, and it's just kind of hot upstairs regardless. You have good insulation in the attic. How much do you have?
It's kind of ironic. The attic is separated by and I don't know why this happened, by a piece of plywood between the lower and the upper part.
Okay.
Why that was when the house was built in 1965, I do not know. But
It may be part of the fire code to prevent fire spread between those attic levels. I'm not sure. But we'd want you to have, you know, 14, 15 inches of insulation up there. Have you got about that much?
Yes, sir.
Okay, very good.
And we have, in the upper part, we have four passive turtle vents.
Right, right. And you don't have any gable vents in the end of the house, do you?
No, we do not.
Okay. The thing is, you know, in a bi-level, of course, you have two levels. That's why they call it a bi-level. You do get cold air accumulating downstairs and hot air upstairs. If you balanced your vents, so sometimes it helps to close down some of the vents in the lower level to force more air upstairs. Have you done that?
No, but there is a room upstairs, one of the bedrooms we did not use, and that is closed off.
Another couple of tips here before we tear into the attic and spend all that money on solar-powered roof vents is a bi-level would be a good idea to put a ceiling fan in the upper level. Do you have a ceiling fan, or is there a place you could put one in?
Yes, we do. It's in the hallway as well as in three bedrooms.
Very good. If you keep those, the hallway one, I wouldn't do the bedrooms necessarily, but if you have the hallway one blowing down, which yes. means it's going counterclockwise, that helps push hot air back through the furnace to be cooled by the AC system. Also, it also helps, and you're similar to people that call here with a two-story home, it helps to run that furnace fan to the always-on position continuously in the afternoons and into the evening. Have you tried doing that?
No, we haven't.
Yeah. That mixes up the air masses. It'll cool the upper level and it'll warm a little bit the lower level. But mixing those air levels together, that will buy you between 5 and 10 degrees of cooling in the upper level. So, you know, starting about, 3 o'clock or so, something like that, when the hottest part of the afternoon comes, flick that little switch on the thermostat to always on, and that will help. Now, I'm not trying to discount your concern about the hot attic. I'm sure the attic is pretty hot. I would probably encourage you to probably not spend the money for those solar power attic fans. First of all, they're pricey. Secondly, you got to get up there in the winter and cover them so they don't spin all winter long. You don't want to suck the warm air out of your attic. So that's another hassle maintenance-wise, and you don't want to fall off the roof and all that. So I would discourage you from doing that. One thing that you could do, and of course you're going to need to cover these too in the winter, for a lot cheaper and the same effect, you could get some turbine vents. You know what those are?
Yes.
Yeah. The turbine vents, now they're not pretty. Matter of fact, they're kind of ugly, so you'd want to probably put them in the back of the house. But that way, you're going to get that same suction or that vacuum creation to suck hot air out of the attic from the turbines that you'll get from the solar-powered attic fans, but for a lot less money and, frankly, a lot more volume of air movement. So that's what I would probably encourage you to do that.
Do those, turbine fans, first of all, do they have to be covered in the winter?
They should be, just like I mentioned to the solar. You put a garbage bag and a bungee cord over them, yeah. I mean, that would be advisable, because that passive solar heat in the attic in the winter, you want to hang on to that. So you don't want that heat being sucked out of the attic like you do in the summertime. You see what I'm saying?
Correct. And yeah. Do they have to be electrically powered?
No, no, they're passive. So
they
just
are.
The hot air rising out of the attic will spin them, and that spinning creates a little bit of a, you know, the old Bernoulli thing, creates a little vacuum to suck more air out. So you get some good circulation. Now, the attic ventilation 101 is you have to have a source for new air to get in the attic. So I hope you have soffit vents up behind the gutters. Do you have those that you know of?
Yes, we do. And
good.
Those are, they're not blocked by anything.
Good, good. Oh, man, you're way ahead of me. So, yeah, so you've got a good source. Air's got to go from low to high in the attic because it's, you know, hot air rises because of the densities. So a couple of turbine vents on the back of your house, so maybe they're not visible from the street. As I say, they're a little ugly. I think that would really make a big difference in your attic. But so there is a two or three things: a furnace fan always on in the afternoon on the hot days, running the ceiling fan, blowing air down to force hot air back through the furnace, and the turbine vents. I think for a lot less money, you're going to get the same effect. Okay.
Okay, but have you, getting back to the solar,
yeah,
have you heard any, other than covering it in the winter, have you heard any negatives?
I have not, other than the price. They're a little pricey,
okay.
But
okay.
I have not heard anything negative about them. I think they do a pretty good job. They don't handle the volume of air that you'd get on a mechanical, you know, a electrically powered fan, but they do help for sure, yeah.
Okay, good.
They're kind of expensive for my taste. Okay?
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I always appreciate talking to you, and I appreciate your advice.
Patrick, those are great questions, and I'm glad you called. Thanks for checking in with us. 719-473-1240 is our telephone number. It's 12 minutes before the hour. We'll be back right after this, right here on Around the House. Hey, you know, lots of folks sell siding, windows, doors, those kinds of things for the exterior of your house. So how do you pick the right company? Well, I want you to call Dutch's Home Improvement. I met Gary, the owner, and he's pretty impressive. His good old-fashioned customer service is the watchword at Dutch's Home Improvement. And quality, they have the best installers in town, carry only the best top-quality brands of windows, doors, siding, and patio covers. They've been standing behind their work for more than 30 years now. Dutch's Home Improvement, they're fully licensed and insured, and they're your local home improvement specialists, and they serve the Springs and surrounding areas, and they will give your house a well-needed facelift. If you have ugly old windows, wood, steel, or aluminum windows, get rid of them. Get some energy-efficient windows. You'll save money summer and winter when you call Dutch's, and your house will look a lot younger than its actual age. Give them a call. Tell them Ken Moon sent you. 719-392-1369, 392-1369, or DutchesHomeImprovement.com.
From your roof to your foundation and everywhere in between, Ken Moon has solutions around the house. Give him a call now at 719-473-1240. That's 719-473-1240.
Welcome back. It's 8 minutes before the hour. Chris Moyer in the house. He's back from his vacation. I found out he's going to take another one. This guy's never around. All you do is take vacations, don't you?
But
you
I select them during the summer. So
yeah, I know, because winter is sports season, right? So
yeah, I got locked down in sports during the fall and the winter. So yeah, it's.
Tell us about, you had a little baseball a trip and you enjoyed it.
I loved it. Got to see different minor league parks and some college wood bat league parks up in Wisconsin. And that was real nice there. Also had a baseball convention that was great. A lot of good speakers, and also got to see a baseball game there at Guarantee Rate Field. We mentioned
the White Sox.
White Sox and the St. Louis Cardinals.
Well, the Rockies haven't improved a lot since you left. They're still 18 games out.
Right.
So anyway, thank you, Chris. A well-deserved vacation. Pretty much all baseball, but that's okay. He enjoyed himself, and that's the main thing. Stephanie sent me an interesting email. I don't know if I've seen this kind of thing before. She says, "What do you think of adding a fragrance like vanilla to the paint before I start to paint the bedrooms?" Interesting question. I don't think much of it for two reasons, Stephanie. First of all, the smell, if any, won't last. How do I know that? Well, kind of non-scientifically, a newly painted house has that pleasant, sweet latex paint smell, but after a month, it's pretty much gone. The same thing will happen to your additive. Plus, I don't believe in interfering with the chemistry of the paint formulation. Most fragrances contain a little alcohol. Who knows how that or any other components of the fragrance will affect the coverage or the curing of your expensive paint. So I would probably not do that. It's a great idea, and I'm wondering if maybe based on your idea, if somebody will invent a flavored paint somewhere along the line. So anyway, 719-473-1240 is our telephone number. Let's see, who's this from? No, that one I did already. Here we go. I want to stucco over the parts of my house that now has siding, says Jack. How should I approach this with contractors? Well, stucco over siding is a pretty good thing to do to an older house. I walk around my neighborhood every day, and one of the owners had an old rental that sold to some regular owners now, and they've just restuccoed the whole outside of this old house, and it looks terrific. The stucco guys simply staple their tar paper and wire mesh onto the old wood siding and then plaster two or three coats of stucco on the house. It works pretty well. It sounds counterintuitive that they could do this, but it does work well because the lath, that chicken wire, wire mesh, if you want to call it, actually holds the whole thing together. So in terms of the contractors that you find, I would want to get, for sure, homeowner-type references from people just like you that had this job done. They should give you the name of the last couple of owners that had stucco put over their siding. And just call them up and talk to them, drive by their house and see how things look. Generally speaking, they'll be perfectly honest with you, and most of the contractors around are fine, but this is a really pricey thing, relatively speaking, so you know you want to kind of shop around and stuff. It's a pretty messy operation, so the cleanup's going to be a big part of their existing of what they do. So anyway, that's just kind of the story on that. Let's see. Finally, Lance says, my two-car garage door fits okay on one side, but the other side is 1.5 inches above the counter. By the way, let me go back to that stucco over siding. Since it is so messy and so expensive, you might want to check out just getting new siding over what you have now. You could call my friends over there at Dutch's Home Improvement and get some new, really nice-looking, no-maintenance vinyl siding over what you have now, and that would be a lot less money and a lot less messy and a lot quicker for you to do that. Your house will look great, so you might want to think about that as an alternative because the stucco, as I say, is quite expensive and very, very messy and disruptive to your family's lifestyle. So give Dutch's a call and check out some new siding as another really viable alternative. By the way, Lance says, my garage door fits okay on one side. The other side's 1 inch above the floor. Is there something I can fix myself? Usually not. If you've got a wood door, sometimes you can scribe the bottom of the wood door to match the contour of the existing concrete. But if you have a metal door, then the only answer here is to add a layer of weather stripping. You got one layer. Now you might add a couple layers. You can screw them on with some Phillips screws, sheet metal screws, to add some thicker rubber insulation on the bottom of the door to close up that gap. Otherwise, you got to completely re-pour the garage floor, which is a big hassle and is quite expensive. So, that's just another thought on that process. You want to keep out the bugs and the dust and the snow and the dirt and the mice. So get that gap closed up. Well, that's all she wrote for the program for today. Chris Moyer, we're good to have you back. Thanks for your help in the control room today, as always. Thanks to Kathy Hook for joining us from the Colorado Springs Fire Department. God bless you all. Have a great week and stay cool. We'll see you next time right here on Around the House.